Okay, so this evening we turn our attention to the Parsha of Korach, and the opening psukim, in fact, the opening words of the Parsha will already give us much to ponder. And we'll try and do justice to the psukim to read them closely and see what the Parsha yields. The questions begin with the first two words, Vayikach Korach, and the reason why that's room for contemplation is because the Parsha, or the Pasuk, doesn't actually say what Korach took. We have a subject, we have a verb, but we have no object. It says Korach took, and we never find out what or who it is that he took. All that happens is that the pasuk keeps going. So first we have Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi, and then V'dason v'aviron ben Eliav and On ben Peles, who kind of goes missing for reasons that we know relatively quickly. But what's important to note here is that whatever Korach took, he's not the only person who's described as doing so. Korach took, who else? Dasan and Aviram, for our purposes. So we have three takers. Again, nothing taken, but three takers. However, if that's the case, it's very interesting to go back to the beginning of the Pasuk, which says, Vayikach Korach, in the singular. If you proceed to tell me that there is more than one taker, so then it should have said Vayikru. Vayikru, and again, whatever it is that they took. But who took? Korach, Dasan and Aviram. That's Lashon Rabbim. That's the plural. So how do you square more than one taker in the opening pasuk with the in singular Vayikach Korach? Rashi discusses Vayikach Korach, Rashi's words, that we should have them read. Lakach et atzmo, interestingly. In other words, if the only thing mentioned in the pasuk is Korach, and you wonder, well, if Korach's taking, then who was taken? The answer is Korach. So Vayikach Korach means Korach took, but also Vayikach Korach, he took Korach. He was the taker and the taken. He's the subject and the object. But what does it mean? Where did he take himself to? Lakach et atzmo letzad echad. He took himself to one side. Lios nechlak mitocha eda, to be distinct from the congregation. Leor ala kahuna, to raise aspersions with regards to the kahuna. V'zoi shetirgem unkelus v'ispaleg. And that's why unkelus translates the word vayikach not with an expression of taking, and there are Aramaic words for taking, but unkelus does not translate it as taking, but rather v'ispaleg, to be separated from. That's Rashi's explanation. But as we will see, there is room for others to say more. And the one who's going to guide us in the opening section of Parshas Korach this evening is the Netziv in the HaMikdavar. And the first thing the Netziv draws our attention to is that although Korach's party, his group, has different elements in them, in it, that is to say, there's Korach, and then there's Dasan and Aviram, and you also have those 250 men. That effectively is what makes up the Adas Korach, the assembly of Korach. But as we can see, these three factions are not the same. The three component parts of his group are not the same. They're not treated the same. They're not treated the same by Moshe, and they're not treated the same by heaven. And what do we mean by that? You see, for example, in Pasuk Yud Zayin, as we move to Yud Zayin, to the test with the Ketores, so what does it say? Moshe says to Korach, Ukechu ishmach daso, And each one should take their machta, their fire pan for the keturahs. Unesatem aleim keturahs, and you shall place keturahs. V'ikrevtem lefnei Hashem ish machta. So each one should then offer that before Hashem. This is the famous test of the keturahs. Chamishim umasayim machtos, 250 machtos, fire pans. V'ata, and you, Korach, v'aron ish machtoso. You and Aaron. We see, as Moshe is describing, who should be involved in this test. He's very specific. It's for you, Aaron, and the 250 men, which is interesting, because we know that Korach's group comprises more than that. Whatever happened to Dathan and Aviram? Well, apparently, they're not in the test. They were not offered to participate. And the question is, well, why not? Why not make it 252, which is the number that there is? Additionally, if we go later in the parak, we'll see that when we mentioned before, heaven does not treat them the same way, is because they didn't meet their end through the same means. You have in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, the famous opening up of the earth, it opens its mouth to swallow them up. And who did it swallow up? Dathan and Aviram, that part of Korach's group. Vayerdu Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Heim v'chol asher lahem, chayim l'shola, everything went down. Vayovdu mitoch ha-kahal. The 250 men were not swallowed up by the ground. What happened to them? Pasuk Lamed Hey. Ve'esh yatsa me'es Hashem, a fire came out from before Hashem. Vatochal esa chamishim umasayim ish. And it consumed the 250 men, makrivei haketores. So while each of the parts of Korach's group ultimately are punished, but they're not punished in the same way, and the question is, why not? Says the HaMikdavar, what we need to understand, and it's very easy to see this, is that the different parts that make up Korach's group are very different from each other. Very diverse, both in terms of their quality and in terms of their motives and their agenda. What is it exactly that they want? And he begins with the 250 men, who are very interesting. We know they're very choshevah people. Some of them are heads of Sanhedrin, some of them are Nesiim. And somehow they get involved in Korach. Says the Netziv, the best way to introduce these 250 men in the beginning of our parsha is to consider what happens at the very end of last week's parsha. What is the final section of Parshas Shelach? It's the parsha of Tzitzis. It's very interesting. From Tzitzis into Korach. How so? As we know, there are two different colors of the threads of tzitzis. You have the white, which is most of them, and then you have one or two, depending on who you ask, possibly more, of treles. And as we know, treles, as described by the Gemara, the treles is like the sea, and the sea is like the heavens, and the heavens is like the Kisei HaKavod. And what does this mean? Tzitzis are there to remind us to keep the mitzvahs. But there's two types of people, there's two types of Jews that need to be reminded to keep the rules, but for very different reasons. For most people, it's because if you don't tell them to keep the rules, so they're not going to keep them. Not for any elevated reason, but because they've got their other involvements and other occupations. Most people are white threads. I mean, white is lack of color, in the sense that they're getting on with their own things, so they need to be told, here are the mitzvahs. So most of the threads are white because most people are white in that respect, and they need to be energized and galvanized and enlisted in mitzvahs. Hopefully, once you tell them about the mitzvahs, they'll do that. But every so often you meet someone who's a tcheles person, who's a throne of glory person, who's full of lofty thoughts, elevated ideals, whose only real concern in life is how to develop spiritually and to go as far as he can go. But sometimes that's further than the halacha allows him to go, because it's not even in his own spiritual interests, but he doesn't recognize boundaries. For him, whatever he can do must be appropriate. Says the Netziv, that Parsha of Tzitzis is the perfect introduction to Parshas Korach, because these 250 men are Tcheles people. They want to get as close as they can to the ultimate source of spirituality in whatever way possible. And if it's impermissible to them, they have a difficulty accepting that. They feel the rules are holding them back from elevating themselves as far as they can go. It's very telling to see how the Pasuk refers to them in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Gimel, when Moshe is told to tell Elazar to take the fire pans and actually plate the Mizbeach with them. They're copper, right? And they plate the Mizbeach with them. And how are they referred to? Pasuk Gimel, Es machtos hachatoy ma'ele benafshosam. The machtos, the fire pans, of these people who sinned with their soul. How does a person sin with their soul? Or doesn't everyone sin with their soul? Why is this a specific characterization of these people? But the point is, says the Netziv, Chatoim ha'ele benafshosam means that they sin in the area of soul, for soul purposes, for S-O-U-L, for soul reasons, in order to further the development of their soul. That was where the sin came from. Most people do not sin for that reason. And this is why the Torah, in a sense, it gives recognition. Their motivation was not wrong. It was just they were not prepared to accept the answer that thus far and no further for you. In fact, he draws a parallel. There's one other person in the Torah who's also referred to as Chote Benafsho, or Chote Al HaNefesh. And that's a Nazir from a couple of weeks ago, Nazir. In the event that he comes into contact with a dead person, in which case his Nazirus is undone, and there's a certain korbanos he has to bring, and the whole count gets reset, and the Pasuk refers to him then as Chata Al HaNefesh. He sinned concerning a soul. And the question is, whose soul? Says the Netziv, his own soul. But what does that mean? Is the institution of Nazirus, is it always inappropriate? Is it always wrong? It's there for a reason. It's there. It's good for some people. But the point is, if this Nazir has the misfortune of coming into contact with a mace, that's a sign from heaven that Nazirus is not appropriate for him. He's looking to go too far, further than he really is. And what's that called? Chata al hanefesh. That's called sinning concerning a soul. In other words, he wants to take his soul further than it is appropriate to go. And that's a very specific type of sin. And that's what these 250 men were all about. What do they want? They want the avoda. They feel hard done by. They feel wronged by the fact that it was restricted to the kohanim, and they don't want to take no for an answer. However, they are good people. Those 250 men would never have instigated a machlokas against Moshe. That far, they wouldn't go. They feel frustrated. They feel repressed, but they're not going to have a machlokas with Moshe Rabbeinu. They don't want trouble, and so they wait. On the other side of the spectrum, within Korach's men, you have Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram are not interested in going near the avoda with a 10-foot pole. The only thing they're interested in is causing trouble for Moshe. And it's very interesting, again, the closer we read the Psukim, there's an amazing insight from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh in Parshas Pinchas, which gives us like a brief retrospective into the different factions within Korach's group. Bamidbar Perek Kafvav Pasuk Tes. Perek Kafvav Pasuk Tes. Formally, it's counting. It's the final count of Bnei Yisrael. And yet, there's a certain insight that we get into Korach. Perek Kavav Pasuk Tes. Uvenei Eliav, this is the tribe of Reuven, Nimuel, Dasan, and Avira. So Dasan and Avira are mentioned, and then the Pasuk digresses momentarily to speak about them. Hu Dasan va'aviram. These are the very same Dasan and Aviram, Kriya Ha'ida, the notables among the community, Asher Hitsu al Moshe al Aharon va'adas Korach, who instigated a machlokas against Moshe and Aaron, ba'adas Korach, together with Korach's men, ba'hatzosam al Hashem, when they had a machlokas with Hashem. So says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, make up your mind. Who's the machlokas with? In the beginning of the pasuk, it says they had a machlokas with Moshe. At the end of the pasuk, it says they had a machlokas with Hashem. Which is it? Is it both? It's not the same, exactly the same thing. But the point is, says the Aruch Haim, you see what the pasuk is saying. Dasan and Aviram had a machlokas with Moshe and Aaron. Asher Hitzu al Moshe val Aaron is Dasan and Aviram's. They don't have a quarrel with Hashem. They just like him to leave them alone. They don't have any. They don't want things to be different. Their machlokas is with Moshe and Aaron, but they are together with Adas Korach, Bahatso some who are themselves having a machlokas with Hashem. Who feel they don't doubt that Moshe is representing Hashem's word when he says that you cannot do the avoda. They're upset with that. So ultimately, they're upset with Hashem. And these are now the two tiers of confrontation or of grievance. Dasan and Aviram, their grievances with Moshe and Aaron, just because they're Moshe and Aaron. And Adas Korach, those 250 men, their grievance is with Hashem. That is opened up by the Pasuk. However, if we should ask, were Dasan and Aviram prepared to start a machlokas? Of course they are. If only they could. But they can't. Because Dasan and Aviram have no credibility amongst anyone who's serious. They're known troublemakers, and therefore they can't really start anything. So you have this amazing, these two shelves, these two extremes. On the one hand, the 250 men, they feel they have a significant grievance, but they don't want to start trouble. Dasan and Aviram do want to start trouble, but they can't. And who's in the middle? Korach. And what do we say about Korach? Officially, formally, Korach is aligned with the 250 men. That is to say, if you ask him, that's what he'll say. If you ask him what he wants, he'll say he wants to do the avoda, just like the other 250 men. That's the only thing that will effectively give Korach their support. Because what Korach really wants, as we know from other sources, he wants to be the Nasi. No one else cares whether he's the Nasi or not. So he's hardly going to get support from a broader group if that's his goal. And therefore his stated goal on the outside is the Avoda. But underneath, it's less noble motivations. So Korach is very interesting because there's more to him than meets the eye. What you hear on the outside and what's going on the inside is not the same thing. And I wonder if it's possible to say this. Maybe I should speak to an Aramaic scholar. But if we go back to Unculus, and Unculus translates the word vayikach as v'ispaleg. So obviously it comes from plag, which is to section off, but the ispaleg literally means he split himself in two. It's a reflexive. And that's exactly the point with Korach. Korach split into two. There's the outside and the inside. But getting back to the taking. So who can really get the whole machlokas moving? It can only be Korach. And that is why the Pasuk says, Vayikach Korach. Korach took, meaning he took the whole thing. He took the whole situation. He's the one that got it moving. On the one hand, he has the credibility to attract a following and to have a significant machlokas with Moshe, but he also has the motivation that he'd be prepared to do that. Korach is the one who brings them all together. But interestingly, it's more nuanced than that. On the one hand, we say Korach took, but isn't it also true that the pasuk goes on to say and Dasan and Aviram? Doesn't it sound like Dasan and Aviram also took? So they're all, so there's three takers now. But our question was, well, why does it say Vayikach in the singular? But sometimes when there's more than one person involved, but the Torah uses the singular, it's to tell you that one is the prime taker, the primary instigator, and then others are secondary instigators. And that nuance comes by you've got more than one entity, but the Lashon Yochid is used, the singular is used, because one of them was more equal than the others in terms of getting this machlokas going. And this is now the three tiers of Korach's people. You have Korach at the top, the prime taker, and Dasan and Aviram, who are secondary takers. And what about the 250 men? They're not takers at all. They're the taken. They're in the next pasuk, and they get involved. Or if we could put it slightly differently, the respective roles of these three elements within Korach's group is that Korach provided the spark for the machlokas. Dasan and Aviram fanned the flames, and the 250 men were the firewood. And that's how the whole conflagration went up. And this is why, as we mentioned before, Moshe does not relate to all of these elements in the same way. When he presents and suggests the test with the Ketores, he only offers it to Korach, who officially wants the Avodah, and the 250 men. Moshe doesn't even do the courtesy or go through even the formality of offering two firepans to Dasan and Aviram. They don't even profess any interest in that type of thing, and it's clear from the start. But it's also the reason why, when all of these elements meet their end, the end is not the same. That's really the Torah's way. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's way of saying the difference between these is that the 250 men fell into bad company. Dasan and Aviram were the bad company. And that's why the 250 men, how do they meet their end? They're consumed by fire, says the Netziv. Isn't that true? Isn't that as much a statement of them in life as it was in death? In other words, that was them. They were consumed by a holy fire and in a way that knew no boundaries, respected or was not prepared to accept any restrictions. And that was their undoing. But at the very least, it's an expression of recognition from the Torah. Here lie 250 men who were consumed by holy fire in life and in death. Dasan and Aviram, on the other hand, are swallowed up in the ground. It's like they never existed. It's the ultimate dismissal. All they wanted to do was to make a name for themselves and look around. You can never see a trace of the fact that they were ever there. Those are two very different responses from the Torah. So these are the Netziv's opening comment, and it really it opens up for us the whole concept of Adas Korach. What's interesting is, if we go back to the test of the Ketores, for those, primarily for the 250 men, and Pasuk Beis describes them. Let's have a look at Pasuk Beis. Try and stay as closely with the Pesukim as we can. Perek Tetzayin, Pasuk Beis. Vayakumu lefnei Moshe, va'anoshim ibnei Yisrael, chamishim u'masayim. So you have these 250 men from among the Jewish people. Nesiei Eido, among them are the princes themselves. And Rashi tells us, spells it out in no uncertain terms. We're talking about Elitzur ben Shidei, or all of those ones that we're very familiar with their names from Parshas Bamidbar, and Noso, and Ba'alosecha. Those are 12 of these 250 men. There's a very interesting medrash, in fact, which in Parshas Noso, there is a tradition or an opinion in Chazal that whenever the word Vayehi appears in the Chumash, it always portends a calamity. The Gemara actually has a similar discussion to this in Maseches Megillah and Daf Yud. Perhaps it's every Vayehi, maybe it's Vayehi Bimei. Nothing good ever seems to happen after the words Vayehi Bimei. Vayehi Bimei Achashveirosh, disaster. Vayehi Bimei Shvot HaShoftim, that's how Rus begins. But some say even the word Vayehi is already not such a good thing. In fact, Reb David Tevel of Minsk, the great Talmud of Reb Chaim of Elozhin, says this is the contrast between Vayehi, which is a Loshen Tsar, a distress, and Vahaya, which is always a Loshen of Simcha. Vahaya is always has this very positive and upbeat connotation. Why? They're just times. Vayehi, Vahaya, says Reb David Tevel in the Drushas Nachlas David. Vayehi is an interesting word because it's really Yehi, which is the future, Yehi, and the Vav flips it to the past. Vav ahipuch, the Vav conversive. Vayehi takes Yehi, it will be, and makes it into the past. Why? Or how does that relate to our discussion? Because that's the sign of a difficult time. It's in front of you and you wish it was over already. You'd love the future to become the past. You wish it was behind you. That's why Vayehi is Lashon Tsar. The converse is in the word Vahaya. Because Vahaya is the word Haya in the past. And the Vav also flips it into the future. But what type of thing is in the past but you wish it was in the future? What type of thing do you wish that you could experience again once it's over? Something good. And that's why Vahaya is the Lashon of Simcha. Very interesting insight into this well-known idea of Chazal, that Vayehi is Lashon Tsar. But the Medrash proceeds to launch kashas on this idea. Vayehi is a calamity. What do you mean? There's lots of Vayehis that are very positive. And the Gemara fends them all off. The Medrash fends them all off. And one of them is Chanukas HaMishkan. The inauguration of the Mishkan in Parshas Noso, which starts with the word Vayehi. Vayehi, this is Bamidbar Perek Zayin, in the very beginning. Vayehi b'yom kalos Moshe es ha-mishkan. It was on the day that Moshe finished setting up the Mishkan. Korbanos. But what an amazing time. So why do you say Vayehi? It sounds wonderful. Where's the Tsar? Says, and moreover, Vayehi ha-makriv b'yom ha-rishon. It starts to go through the Korbanos. Introduced Nachshon ben Aminadav, the first one, Lamate Yehuda, is introduced with Vayehi, says the Medrash. Yes, it is a Lashon Tsar. You know why? Because in the fullness of time, him and everyone else who offered these korbanos would fall in with Korach and would be killed. And that's why you have, it portends calamity with the word Vayehi. It will not end well in the end for these 12 Nesiim. So says the Medrash. But the Meshech Chochma, so Shaila, you know, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, I'm sorry that it ended badly, but currently it's doing very well. In other words, why do I need to be told at a happy time, and it doesn't get happier than Chanukas HaMishkan, so leave the Tzoros for the Tzoros. I've got to be told here. It's like someone's ruining everything for me. Vayehi b'yamakriv, it's amazing. And someone, the Medrash says, yeah, well, listen, it's not going to end well for them. So let it not end well for them. I'm sorry to hear that, but... Or as Rashi says, be'idin ched v'chedvasa. At a time of joy, be joyous. That's an interesting Medrash question. Why bring in the bitter ending to the happy beginning? Says Meshech Chochma. If we want to get an insight into these people of Korach, they're quite firm on the idea that they should receive the Avodah. Where does that idea come from? Is there anything that makes them convinced that that is true? Or is it just an assertion? Do they just intuitively feel that they should do the Avodah? Do they have anything to base their claim on? Actually, says Meshech Chochma, they do. Because there was a time when they were offering korbanos along with the Kohanim. When was that? The first 12 days. Here is the Nesiim, and they're bringing every korban that a Kohen, that Aaron and the sons brought, the Nesiim also brought. They brought a Chatas, and they brought a Shlamim, and they brought an Ola. So they seem to be on par with the Kohanim. But they're more than on par. Because in one respect, they seem to have outdone the Kohanim in terms of their eligibility. Where? In the area of Keteres. Keteres is never offered by an individual. There is no such thing in ongoing halacha of Keteres brought by a yachid. It is absolutely only brought by the tzibur. Are there any exceptions ever? Yes. The Nesiim. As we know, cast your mind back to the laning for Chanukah or Nosser not too long ago. Kaf achas asara zahav meleya keteres. All of the Nesiim brought keteres. Each one is just an individual. And still they brought keteres. Was it accepted? Yes. Were there any other individuals who brought keteres at that time? There were. Nadav and Avihu. Two sons of Aaron. And they brought keteres and they were struck down dead. What that means is, this is a significant part of where the idea comes from, that you don't have to be a Kohen, you just have to be deserving. Because none of these people were Kohanim, and the Keteres was accepted. Nadav and Avihu were Kohanim, and was not accepted. That is what we would call their Hava Amina. That's where the notion is coming from, that if your heart's in the right place, and you're on level, you should be able to do the avoda, whichever tribe you come from. Now, that's not true, but that's where they thought it came from. And this is the reason, says Meshech Chachman, why Moshe offered them the test through the Keteres. In other words, of all the korbanos that could have been the trial by korban, it could have been anything. It could have been like Eliyahu Bahar HaKarmel, bring an animal, let the fire come down. Why Keteres Dafkum? Because Keteres was their card. That was their ace in the hole, was Keteres. They've succeeded through Keteres. And that's what got them thinking they could do it again. And prove that they could do the avoda, even if they're not Kohanim. That's why Keteres Dafka. Says Meshech Chochma. So now go back to the Medrash. And the Medrash says that every time it says Vayihi, there's something sad about it. There's something distressing about it. And the Medrash asks, well, what could possibly be distressing about Vayihi HaMakriv Bayom HaRishon, the Chanukas HaMishkan? It was all positive. Why did it say Vayihi there? To which the Medrash answered, it's because they'll have a bad outcome. They'll have a bad ending. In the end, they'll fall in with Korach. But our question was, but leave the ending till the end. What's it got to do with now? Says Meshech Chochma, but now we understand. Because it came from there. Part of what allowed them to fall in with Korach was their success during their first 12 days, because they didn't realize that it was a Hara'as Shah. It was a special one-off for the opening of the Mishkan. It doesn't reflect the ongoing operation of the Mishkan, but because they misconstrued that or weren't prepared to accept it, so their success during the first 12 days was their undoing in Parshas Korach. And that's why the Vayehi, which intimates their ending in Korach, is already to be found in Chanukah Samishkan. I mean, that's a real chinuch in terms of what it is to learn a medrash, the comment of the medrash on one word. So this is with respect to the 250 men. But now we come back to Korach himself. And let's read some sukkim here as things get closer to each hour, what we would call. Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Okay, 16:16. Vayomer Moshe al Korach, Atovach al Adosecha, you, all of your men, Heyu lefnei Hashem, Atovach heim v'aron machar. You, them, and Aaron. And what's the parameters of the test? So each one should take their machta, their fire pan, and unusatem aleim keteres. But Keteres v'ikvavtem l'fnei Hashem ish machto. So, chamishim u'masai machtos. This is the pasuk that we read before. 250 machtos. And va'ata va'aron ish machtosu. And you and Aaron, totaling 252. Va'ikhu ish machtosu. And so they did. And they put fire, they put keteres, pesach ol moed u'moshe v'aron. So they did. And the final pasuk for our purpose is vayakel alehem korach es kala eda. Korach gathered the whole eda over them, concerning them. El pesach ol moed. Why is Korach gathering everyone? Rashi says, bedivrei leitzonos. He's looking to mock them. Because no machlokus is a good machlokus without leitzonos, without mocking the other side. That's how it's done. And so you have an interesting situation. 250 men and Korach and Aaron are all given their firepans for the test. And then Korach starts to gather people around to mock them. To mock whom? Well, who's the other side? It's Moshe and Aaron. But once again, Meshe Chochma says there's a bit of a surprise for us here. Interestingly, when we look as the Machtos are gathered up after the fact, or in Pasuk Lamed Hei, the final Pasuk of this Perek Tetzayin Pasuk Lamed Hei, we read it before, but there's a certain emphasis here. Ve'esh yatza me'es Hashem. A fire went out from before Hashem. Va'tochal es hachamishim v'asayim ish. And it consumed the 250 men. Makrivei ha-keteres. Those who offered the keteres. So, with that, at the risk of oversimplifying, but we ask a poshet shaila. Those who were afoul of the keteres test was 251. Because once again, you have the 250 men, but who else was offered? Aaron and Korach. Now, Aaron succeeded. Everyone else fails. Equals 250 plus Korach. But the pasuk only refers to 250 people offering the Keteres. Whatever happened to Korach? Says Meshe Chochma, Korach didn't do it. But why not? Because he knew he would fail? It's not because he knew he would fail. Korach's inner platform for Machlokas emerged at this point. In other words, Korach is not really interested in doing the Avodah. I guess he wouldn't mind, but that's not what he wants. What does he want to do more than anything else is to undermine Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Because if he undermines Moshe Rabbeinu, he can then undermine all the institutions of Moshe Rabbeinu, including who's the Nasi, and then he can be the Nasi. Really, the terrifying thing about Parshas Korach, and we have to speak carefully, but it needs to be said, is the amount that Korach was looking to destroy in order to get what he wanted. In other words, if, as Chazal tell us, he really wants to be the Nasi, he's not so interested in the Avoda. But no one cares if he's the Nasi. So he needs to topple the whole infrastructure, including people's faith in Moshe and in Torah and in all of the mitzvahs. And for as far as Korach is concerned, that's worth it to reduce the whole thing to rubble. And then what's he the Nasi over by the time the whole thing's finished? A pile of rubble. But if that's what it takes, it's almost like no price is too high. And no damage is too great, which is a very chilling thought. But for Korach, therefore, the main objective is to undermine Moshe. Well, if that's the case, the last thing Korach's going to do is to follow Moshe's instructions. What really is driving Korach is Moshe's not going to tell me what to do, and then Moshe says, okay, here's what to do, so then Korach can't allow himself to do that. And he never takes the test. He will then go on to other more ignoble things. He'll be swallowed up together with Dasan and Avira. But you see already at this stage Moshe offers it. Moshe says, you're taking your fire pan? No, I don't have to listen to you. This is the way you'll prove that you can bring the Keteris. I don't care. Why don't you care? This is what you want. No, it isn't. Or whatever it is that he was. But it's a conflict now. Because if you can only get the Avodah through following Moshe's instructions, that's something that Korach is not prepared to do. And moreover, not only is he not prepared to do it, he doesn't feel that any of his men should be prepared to do it either. Says Meshech Chochma, go back to Pasuk Yutes. Everyone's taking their fire pans, everyone's ready. But what's Korach doing? He's gathering everyone around them to mock them. To mock whom? We asked. Says Meshech Chochma, Korach at this stage was mocking his own men. Because he says, you call yourselves Baalei Machlokas? You call yourselves opponents of Moshe? You're following him like sheep again. And therefore he got the rest of the whoever was available to laugh at his own men, who earlier that day were his loyal supporters, brothers in arms, to the last. But they have now become the subject of his derision. So there's very, very intense themes that are taking place in this machlokas with Korach. And indeed, the matter doesn't stop there. Because as we mentioned, while the 250 men are killed by holy fire, consumed by holy fire, you have Dasan and Aviram, and according to Chazal, Korach himself, the Pashtus, are swallowed up in the ground, never to be heard from again. Although, as we know, they are heard from again. There is a famous Gemara in the fifth parak of Baba Basra, describes the travels of Rabba Babar Chana. And there, he relates how he was once invited by some Arab wanderer, nomad, to follow him. He says, come with me, I'll show you where Korach's men are buried. So he accepted the offer. He follows him out. And they come to a place when the ground is a crevice and there's smoke coming out. And he says, that's where they are. But this guide doesn't just say that's where they are. He proceeds, in a sense, to prove it. Because he takes a spear and he takes some wool and he soaks it in water, and then he puts that at the tip of the spear, and then he lowers it down, 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 until you can hear crackling, and he picks it up, and the water has evaporated, the wool has been singed, as if to say, that's where they are, that's what's happening. Famously, he also then says to Rabba Barbar Chana, if you put your ear to the ground, you'll hear, if you listen carefully, you'll hear something very interesting. So, and the time is now. This is now the timing. So he puts his ear to the ground and he hears them say, Moshe v'terasso emes. Moshe and his Torah is true. That's the basis of the song, Moshe emes v'terasso emes. Mm-hmm. So there's two questions. I mean, there's many questions that one could ask, but just two simple questions, quite different from each other. Firstly, what's the whole exercise with the spear and the wool and the water? In other words, if they're just a spear's length away and they already get singed, that means you should probably already know that it's actual fire. There's smoke coming up, that they can see. He has to go that extra step of demonstrating through this exercise that it's like an actual fire. It's an interesting, what exactly is the goal here? A second interesting question is, what they say is Moshe v'terasso emes, and the Gemara says that part of their tikkun is to say this every month. Rashbam adds on Rosh Chodesh, this is their Rosh Chodesh proclamation every month. Moshe and his Torah are true. What does that mean, Moshe and his Torah is true? Presumably, it's two ways of saying the same thing. I mean, Moshe is true in the sense, their issue with Moshe is the Torah. So if you say Moshe is true, it means Moshe's message is true. If you say his Torah is true, that's what you're talking about. But they split it up into two. Moshe and his Torah are true. What's the double expression there? We say that Korach, in order to further his, we have to call them political gains, he wants to be the Nasi, he wants a position of political power, so he's prepared to make a bid for the Avodah, to misrepresent his desire to do the Avodah, like everyone else who really does. But there's more misrepresentation, because Korach also uses words of Torah in order to further his personal and political status. Where do we see this? Well-known questions that he asks in order seemingly to further undermine Moshe through Torah. Torah now becomes a weapon. What are his among his famous questions? He asks Moshe, back again to Tzitzis, if you have a garment that's made entirely of Tchelis, does it need a thread of Tchelis? So the answer is yes, because Tzitzis always needs a thread of Tchelis. But Korach begins to ridicule. After all, if the whole garment is made of white, one thread of Tchelis will suffice. So the whole thing is Tchelis. Shouldn't need it. Or secondly, what if you have a room that's full of Sifrei Torah? Does it need a mezuzah by the door? What's the answer? Yes. But why? Korach gets going again. After all, if the room is full of food or other things or appliances, so two short paragraphs are good for the... So the whole thing is full of Sifrei Torah. I mean, you have mezuzahs many times over. Shouldn't need it. What's the goal of Korach here? The goal of Korach is not just, although that's bad enough, to undermine Moshe, where the halacha doesn't seem to fit in with what human reason would have said. It's more than that. Why does he choose these two specific examples where you have something at the end that you don't need if the whole entity is already like that? What's the tzitzis? What's the mezuzah? Or who is the tzitzis and who is the mezuzah? It's Aaron and Moshe. That's how Rabbi Nabachi explains. In other words, the tchelis is there to interject a thread of spirituality within the garment, in the same way that Aaron seems to be. But we're spiritual enough. We are a garment. We're the tchelis. We're the beggar that's completely tchelis. And therefore the thread of tchelis, otherwise known as Aaron, isn't necessary. Or who's the Torah component? The Torah representer for the Jewish people? Moshe. But we're not a room full of empty things. We're a room full of Sifrei Torah. We don't need a mezuzah at the doorpost, otherwise known as Moshe. So this is, at its most insidious, the mercenary and cynical use of Divrei Torah in order to jab at a political opponent. Now, what's so difficult about this, what's so distressing about this, is that you can never really confront Korach about something like this, because then not only is he intellectually in the right, he's also the aggrieved and misunderstood party. I mean, that's what's so slippery about using a smokescreen like that. In other words, if someone confronts him and says, why are you trying to undermine Moshe? He's saying, I'm not undermining anyone. I'm interested in halacha. I find it fascinating. I made Birchas HaTorah this morning. I'd like to get good returns on my brachas. I know that Moshe knows the halacha, and we're just discussing things like it's pilpul. So you can't confront him. That's what's so distressing. But what has happened? Words of Torah have become blunt instruments to attack the other person with. In the end, Korach's interest in Divrei Torah somehow dissipated as things got closer. By then it was too late for him. But this can happen to anyone, not to the extreme that Korach took it, but the notion of maybe using things not really in pure terms or for pure motivation, but maybe for impure motivation, Anyone can do that. It's possible to correct someone in a matter of halacha where the goal is not for them to keep halacha properly, but to show them that you notice that they did something, a basic error or something, to make them feel unworthy. All these things are possible. And that's what happened with Korach. And this says the Aruch Laner, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger in his drushes, Minchas Oni, this is what's being depicted by this Arab merchant. And often when Chazal refer to an Arab merchant, Hahutaya, there is a Masoret that that's Eliyahu HaNavi. He has something to tell people. And what's he doing with this whole spear, the whole shtick, with the spear and the wool? That's what Korach did. But what does that mean? It means he takes a spear, because Korach took a spear. In other words, Korach went to war against Moshe. No question about it. And now we ask, well, what's the war over? What's the war about? What's at the tip of the spear? What's at the tip of the spear is wool. Wool, in Chazal, is what clothes are made from, and clothes are the honorer of the person. Clothing brings honor and dignity to a person. And the Gemara says famously, Rabbi Yochanan would always refer to his clothing as mechabdusi, his honorers, because that's what they do. In fact, halachas are learned from there. The halacha that one should have special clothes for Shabbos is learned from the word vechibadato, which is in the Navi Yishaya. Some people say it before Kiddush on Shabbos morning. Vechibadato, me'asos durachecha, vechibadato, honor it, meaning you should have special honorers. You should have special clothes. So the wool is covered. In the end, that's what Korach's war with Moshe is about. What's at the tip of the spear? It's a clump of wool. There's just one thing. No one ever officially went to war for their covet. There's one thing you need to do before you put the wool on the end of the spear, and that is you soak it in water. And the water, of course, is Torah. Now you're good to go. Now you can fix that to the tip of the spear and lunge away. Because now, as you parry and thrust with Moshe, and people are saying, why are you in this for your covet? You're saying, that's not my covet. The wool that you see at the top of the spear, it's just to hold the water together. But I just want to have a Torah discussion with Moshe. And that's exactly what Korach did. Woe to the machlokas, where the two sides are thrusting wool at each other, but it's soaked in water. Except, as we know, it didn't last till the end. And as it got closer to the moment of truth, Korach's own true intentions were revealed. What does that mean? This Arab merchant, he takes the spear, he lowers it closer and closer to the fire. As it gets closer and closer to that point, where does the water go? Evaporates. And what are you left with? Just the wool. And the wool gets singed. And that's what happened to Korach. Because it wasn't it too long before all the Divrei Torah had been said, and they evaporated, and it's just an issue of Korach, of covered, and the covered gets burned. So part of the problem with Korach is not only that what he said wasn't true, but even what he did say, he wasn't true in how he said it. I think this is why what Korach's men are forced to proclaim once a month is Moshe and his Torah are true. What does that mean, Moshe and his Torah is true? Because it's possible for someone's Torah to be true, but they're not true. In other words, it's possible for the Torah words that they're saying to be correct, but they're not true to them in terms of using them in a genuine sense. Maybe they're being untrue as they use them. Maybe it's to score some other type of points or other type of outcome, which is different than the pure spreading and development of Torah knowledge. And therefore, Korach and his men said, not only was Moshe's Torah true, Moshe was true. He was never untrue to his message. Everything he said for the right reasons. And that, I think, is also something to learn from Korach, is that we hope that the truth is always on our side. But it, in a sense, that's half of the equation. that what one is saying is true. But the personal demand is to be true to what one is saying, always to be sure that it's for the right reasons in all the many manifestations of how this can occur. And this is the ongoing sugya of machlokas. And as we can appreciate, there's two types of machlokasim, as they're divided by Chazal. For the sake of heaven, not for the sake of heaven. How can you tell the difference between them? Here's how you can't tell the difference between them, that they're advertised as such. Because no machlokas is ever advertised as not for the sake of heaven. They're all advertised as for the sake of heaven, but the vast majority of them are not. So one needs another metric to know. What does the Mishnah tell us in Pirkei Avos? Machlokas, which is l'shem shamayim, in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos, sofa l'hiskayim, in the end it will endure. And if it's not l'shem shamayim, ein sofa l'hiskayim. It won't endure. And all the Mefarshim ask us the same question. That seems to be counterintuitive. One might have hoped to hear the opposite, as if to say, if it's for the sake of heaven, so then it will stop. If it's not for the sake of heaven, you'll never hear the end of it. So not for the sake of heaven will endure. The Shem Shamayim won't endure. And the Mishnah says exactly the opposite. So what does it mean? And there's many, many Pirushim as we can appreciate. But what I heard from my cousin, Rav Elimelech Kuperman, that's Rav Yehuda's son, who Rav Elimelech used to walk with Rav Shlomo Zalman to Shul every morning, and he used to speak with him and hear from him. And Rav Shlomo Zalman said that the difference between a machlokas l'shem shamayim and not l'shem shamayim is there's always a topic that the machlokas begins. And if it's l'shem shamayim, it will remain the topic of machlokas. It will not divert and become something else. It's a good thing. If people really want to thrash out this question and their... So they will stay on topic. They will stay focused on the question at hand. That's called sofa l'hiskayim. But if it's not l'shem shamayim, so the machlokas won't remain. Why? Because it will very soon get replaced. By what? By some other thing. The machlokas will change clothing. It will be about something else. It began about a matter of principle, but then within 3 days, it's about what did he say and what did they say and who was he seen with and then what happened and all of a sudden the focus has been diverted to things which the machlokas isn't really about. And where did the machlokas go? No one remembers. What was it even about? Some people remember. But this is the concept of Ein Sofa L'Hiskayim. Because before too long, it will be hard to find the machlokas because it's been taken over by so many other side things which have then become the center. So as the Prima Godim reminds us, there was always a concept of learning topical matters in Yonah D'Yoma. Says the Prima Godim, Parshas Korach is in Yonah D'Yoma every day. Because it schools us in how to spot a machlokas, how to avoid a machlokas, and even though every once in a while there's a machlokas l'shem shamayim, I think Batal B'Shishim is generous in terms of the statistics for how many of the machlokasim really are for the sake of heaven, and therefore the Jewish people can never do with too much shalom. And the more we keep an eye out for machlokas, the more we ensure that we don't fall for some type of presentation of something that makes it yes l'shem shamayim, the more we'll provoke between ourselves shalom, ava, and achva v'reus, and the more as we become one, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be connected to us, and we should see only b'saras tovos, yeshuas v'nechamas. All the very best, have a good night and a wonderful week.